Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and our conversation, Relationships That Work. Find resources to share these conversations with people in your life at fabricmpls.com and share your own thoughts there or by finding us on social media at fabricmpls.
Hi, everybody. Greg Meyer here, coming to you from our 14th Avenue studio. Yeah, it is now our eighth week of being an entirely virtual community. For those of you who aren't near us in South Minneapolis, the fact that geography suddenly doesn't matter that much is a good thing. And for all of you that are finding ways to weave your life with us, we just thank you that you're doing that. But I still got to say, speaking to my laptop is not the same as speaking to real people. So bear with me as I try to give this another shot. Okay, so COVID-19, this pandemic, you know, what we're discovering is that this is presenting us with an unprecedented and a universally, although not equally, shared challenge. It's causing a tide to run against every way we have ever learned to live and to work in the past. Now, among the things that are being challenged this way are our relationships. Eli Finkel, who studies these things, said a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned it earlier, that on the whole, the pandemic is going to be damaging our relationships. But, he said, it doesn't have to. And that's the part that we are going to be focusing on, the it doesn't have to part. The truth is, we all need relationships that work. And no one thing that is happening today during the pandemic is actually all that different from the things that happened to us and we've dealt with all of our lives. It's just that it's all happening at once. The pervasiveness of the pressures and the changes, the lack of a timeline for when the social distancing might stop. I mean, that's what we've never seen before. That's what we've never dealt with before. Now, I do realize that there are some of you out there for whom this is like the ideal situation. You've always dreamed of this a long period of time when you could just hunker down with yourself or with those couple of special people in your world and not have to deal with all the other ones that you would rather not be dealing with. But for the vast majority of us, this isolation is bringing in unusual strain on our relationships. So I don't care who you are, though, which of those preferences you might have, your relationships are at the root of your quality of life, and they are being tested right now. So it's time to talk about those relationships. But I also need you to know before we get in here too far that we are not talking about having perfect relationships. We're not talking about drumming out all the problems that you might have there. No, there is no such thing as a perfect relationship. And the best of relationships still have problems in them. I mean, that's just what happens with people when they get together because they're different. What we are talking about, what we're focusing on, is how we can use this stressful season as one in which your relationships will overall grow. And yes, that is something that can happen in any relationship, including yours. After all, it isn't the deviations from your course that are going to determine the overall quality of your relationships, even though those deviations are what tend to attract our attention. Your ability, your persistence and courage to get back on course, that is what's going to matter. So today we're going to be talking about an important element in making that happen. Now, you might remember my story from last week when I was talking about my then 6-year-old son, Jordan, who came down in the basement while I was working on some project and was, you know, wanted me to play with him and stuff like that and bothered me until I got to the point where I just, you know, blurted out, "Can't you see I'm doing something important here?" Can you believe that? Anyway, yeah, the truth was I did not have anything that was more important than him to be working on at that point. I mean, he was at the top of any list I could possibly make of important things to do. I mean, I don't even remember the project I was working on. It couldn't have been that important. But giving Jordan the attention and the love, the direction and support, that was my number one job. And I'd lost sight of it. So I was talking last week about how not having my destination in mind is what kept me from reacting to him the way I truly wanted to. But how do you keep that destination in mind? How do you make yourself remember the big picture when the pressures, demands, momentum of the moment, you know, squeeze it all down and keep you from seeing that big picture? The fact is, we all get trapped over and over again with what is happening on the surface, so we just don't see what's going on underneath. You know, that place where the real stuff of life happens. Therefore, we react in ways that don't represent what we want to be true for ourselves and the world. You've done it. I've done it. you said words you couldn't take back. You did something that precipitated someone else doing something. Then it all turned into a nightmare. You made a decision based on what you were feeling, or you were just on autopilot and you couldn't undo it afterwards. Yeah, we all know how that feels. So
imagine a pause button. You know what they look like.
You've got one on every video and audio controller on your computer, your tablet, your phone. You've got one on every remote that's buried in the cushions of your couch. Where you don't have one and you really need it is on yourself. Me too. You know, it's probably not new news to you that I'm not a real tattoo kind of guy. But if I were to get one, I'd have a pause button put right here on the back of my right hand. I mean, have you ever noticed how that hand gets right out there in front of you when you're reacting to something? Usually your finger pointing if you're on the attack, or palms up if you're on a retreat. I mean, if I had that pause button tattooed here, I could save myself from an awful lot of trouble that I get myself into. Anyway, what the pause button does is it gives us a chance to live into the destination, the vision of the relationships that we talked about last week. You see, there's this thing called stimulus and response. It governs most of what we do. Something happens and we react based on either the emotions that we're feeling or the programming we've received going way back to our childhood. You know, it looks like this. You make me angry, I snap back. You criticize me, I get defensive. You have a different idea than I do, I focus on what's wrong with your idea. You suggest we go out to dinner, well, the frugality of my growing up makes me think that's a bad or an indulgent idea, and I get sullen. I mean, there are a million ways that this plays out. And they all take us somewhere, but almost none of them take us to the destination we really want. When we aren't conscious of it, stimulus and response are locked together like this, with no space between them. I'm on autopilot. Push one button and this happens. Push another, that happens. I don't think about it, I just do it. My response might reflect my values, but more often than not, if it's automatic, it reflects my triggered emotion or my lifetime of baggage. Not me, not my true self. Certainly not a three-stranded weaving of my inner self with all things and that which is bigger and beyond me. When we live with stimulus and response locked together like this, we are slaves to our feelings and our programming. And that chain reaction is crushing your spirit and it's killing your relationships. And it doesn't have to be that way. In fact, there is a simple way of separating stimulus response, and it's called a pause. Now, another pause button for me, other than the tattoo on my right hand that I don't have, are doorknobs. Yeah, doorknobs. I realized this many years ago when I first learned the power of the pause button. It was another experience from the days when Chris and my kids were all little and they were full of all the energy and all the life that goes along with that. And I remember coming home after a long day, and this happened day after day after day. It's a late afternoon, and as soon as I walk in the front door, I am descended upon. One kid hanging on my leg, another pulling on my arm to, you know, show me something, and the two others wanting me to settle a dispute between them, all of them talking at the same time, 100 miles an hour. I hadn't even gotten my coat off yet. The only thing I actually felt like doing was turning around and going right back out the door. Now, learning about the pause button changed my life. I mean, it taught me to stop at the door, and while I was reaching for that doorknob, it made me remember to push pause, to stop, take a breath, and think about what was going to happen. And this is key. It made me think about who I wanted to be when I stepped to the other side of the door, and I let the doorknob be the trigger for me to remember to do that, to take that pause. Now, I really can't say what a powerful experience it was for me the first day I did it. I mean, I still had all the same feelings, like, you know, give me a break, it's been a long day, but I didn't let them win out. I chose to throw my backpack on the nearest chair, grab the first kid that came at me, pick them up and give them a hug, and then the next until we were just a big ball of family. I gotta say, I mean, once I gave in to my considered reaction instead of my automatic one, it was way better than any of those escape scenarios I considered. And here's the big thing. It matched what I actually wanted. I loved these kids. And I let the love happen. Now, I didn't manage to pull that off every day, but sometimes I could. And I discovered my kids didn't need me to be perfect. I mean, just like I didn't expect them to be perfect, but they did need me to show up and be on course with them sometimes, at least often enough that they knew where we were all headed together. Now, I could do that because I had learned to pause, to break the chain between stimulus and response. Now, I've learned since then that some doors don't have doorknobs. So I've turned my doorknob signal into just pausing at doors. Yeah, doors symbolize that for me. A door into an office, a door entering field school on Sunday morning, doors I enter a store as a customer, a door that brings me as a visitor to someone's house, doors into hospital rooms. They are all doors into holy places, places where real people live, with their sacred and fragile lives, each wondering if the next person to come through their door will love them for who they are or only for how they match the expectations that come along with that person. This isn't only true with your families, folks. This is true with your friends, with all their bravado or their look at me and my perfect life that they portray in public. It's true at work, behind all the layers of professionalism that get put on top. See, the one thing that we all have in common is that we're human. We all need to be loved. And we all know in our hearts, although not often in our heads, that if we aren't loved for who we are, but only for how well we compare to something outside of us, we hurt. And we long to be loved just because we are loved, because we are loved, because we are loved. That's all. Okay, so back to stimulus and response. That place that can keep us from realizing that kind of love that could be shown to us. Now, I said earlier that when we're trapped with them locked into each other, no space between them, we're slaves to our emotions and our habits and our baggage. But when we can separate them just a little with a pause, we discover freedom. And freedom means that we have the ability to choose who we want to be, not just chained to whom we've become by default. Stephen Covey, in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families, understands this. And he writes about 4 deeply human characteristics that we can insert in that crack that we can wedge between stimulus and response with our pause. The first one he talks about is self-awareness. That is, understanding what I feel like doing, recognizing that I am predisposed to do certain things so that I'm able to ask myself, is that what I want to do? Self-awareness is at the heart of every relationship that you will ever have with anyone. Your ability to genuinely love and to be loved relies on it. It allows you to understand why you feel what you feel, what feelings belong to you, and what feelings belong to the other person in that relationship. It response chained to the stimulus that caused it doesn't need or use self-awareness. It just happens. Okay, the second gift that you can insert is conscience. Is what I'm about to do the right thing to do? Your conscience holds a sense of right and wrong, of generous or selfish, kind or mean, truly helpful or merely expedient. Sure, knowing the right thing to do can be a bit murky, and we don't always choose rightly even when we try. But the point isn't, again, and I just gotta say this again, isn't being perfect, remember? The point is that you are actually choosing and not doing what comes automatically, which is only right, generous, kind, or helpful when we spent a long, long time pausing and creating careful habits so that they become automatic ways of responding. Now, the third gift that he talks about and that we can insert between stimulus and response is our imagination. What could I do in this situation? There is always more than one way to respond. The conditioning that we received growing up, going to school and in the workplace often teaches us to believe that there is only one way of dealing with situations and with people. Let me tell you, there are as many ways of dealing with people as there are people. This one-size-fits-all thing isn't true with beach towels, and it's not true with people. Okay, imagination is also a key component to empathy, allowing you to not only consider what you might do, but to imagine what the situation looks like from the other person's perspective. And that's also incredibly important. The fourth gift that you can insert between stimulus and response with your pause is your independent will. That's saying, I know what I would normally do, I know what I'm expected to do, but this time I will, and you choose. Now this is key because You already know that there are so many times when you know exactly what you should do, but you just don't feel like it. You know, your emotions are too high. Uncle Benny has crossed the line this time, or you've been used too many times by your boss and coworkers. Yeah, I know. It's hard, but you can choose. You have an independent will, so use it. And I realize your emotions are important, but their job is to make you aware of things, not to call the shots in your life. And sure, your past experiences have taught you to always do this, to behave certain ways, but you aren't your parents, your last bad workplace, or that dysfunctional relationship you just got out of. You are you, and you get to choose, not them. And guess what else? You have values, things you care about that matter to you, that reflect the destinations that you hold in your heart for these relationships that could be. And you can choose. Folks, this is the stuff that involves all the dimensions of our humanity. It isn't self-help stuff. This is wholeness creation stuff. It is taking all three strands of our life, our true selves, others, and God all together. And if I need to repeat it, let me say again that when I say God, I am not talking about some being up there on a cloud looking down and deciding whether to help us or not. I'm talking about something as big as what the Old Testament tries to capture in the name of God, Yahweh, which means I am who I am, or that the New Testament describes as the love that it is a gift to even begin to comprehend the height and the width and the depth of. Jesus reflected this kind of stuff. And Jesus started a movement that has outlasted all the abuse we've done to what he was really all about because he lived it out. No, I realize he didn't walk around teaching people to pry their response from their stimuli and insert a pause, sure. But everything he did teach called people to their true selves, back to their values, to what mattered in the world, and empowered them to act from that place. And he lived it as well. One of the things that we hear repeatedly from the Bible is that when he taught people, they would say things like, he taught as one who had authority, not as our teachers of the law. There was something about him, something they detected from him that was different. That word authority is kind of an interesting one. When the Bible uses authority in relationship to Jesus, the word that is almost always used is exousia. That word literally means out of one's being. His authority came from within him. It was not authority that was conferred on him or that was claimed by him, like the religious rulers of the day who had positional authority. No, Jesus had none of that. His words, his actions appeared to be coming from deep within him. It was powerful and it was compelling. His life was a pause. A pause that allowed him to continually tap into what was inside, his character, his connection with the fabric of existence, his exousia. It connected people like nothing they had ever experienced before. Now, maybe that wasn't all easy for him either. There's a story that you may know about a time when he was in the marketplace of a small town and the village vigilantes dragged a woman they'd caught in adultery before him and asked him to judge what they should do. You know, either what the law required, stone her or not. They all had stones in their hands. I mean, this is a tense situation. And Jesus' response? Well, he knelt down and started writing in the sand with his finger. Now, this story has spoken to me in different ways over the years, and I've shared some of them with you. Here's another way it speaks to me. What if all Jesus was doing was buying time? It was a tense and complicated situation, after all. What if he was dealing with his own fear of the crowd and then those rocks in their hands? What if he was dealing with his own anger at the double standard of justice and the hypocrisy that the woman was dragged out but the man wasn't? What if he was struggling with what is the right thing to do right here and what could he possibly say that would actually help the woman and the crowd? So he needed to pause. And he knelt down and he started drawing with his finger in the sand. He didn't need to be dignified or play the game that people were expecting him to play. He only needed to tap into his inner self, to think clearly, to let wisdom rise to the surface, to let his destination of the love that he had for these people rise to the surface as well. And you just have to pause to let that happen. There are a lot of doors that you and I pass through every day. Most of them aren't literal doors. They are the moments that can go unnoticed between what just happened and what she said, what he did, and how you all respond. Each one of those doors is an opportunity. It's a chance to let the winds that drive your life take you further from the hope you have for that relationship with that other person, or a chance to open it so that you can step through to respond in a way that is headed back towards where you really want to go. So as you reach for that next door, as you reach for your next response, pause. Take a breath. Remember who you are, what you're about, what you value most in life. Imagine the many scenarios that could happen and consider what might be, at least your best guess at it, what might be the right thing to do, and choose it. I'll say it again. Relationships are hard, but they are also wonderful. And pausing and interrupting what automatically happens is a practice that can breathe life and integrity and respect within yourself and with others at the same time. I hope you can see we have no expectations that your relationships could ever be perfect. That doesn't exist. But it is possible for us to find the ability to get back on course more often and with less effort so that we don't get so far off course and cause so much pain and tempt us to give up hope on those relationships. So pause now. Take that breath again. This message that you just listened to was a stimulus. What will your response be? Move on to what's next, like you maybe are programmed to do with all the inputs that come into your life every day. To say maybe that was interesting and then just forget it. Or will you take some time? Would you pause to consider what your pause button is? Will you find ways to stop the chain reaction of what you're wired to do so that you can do what you choose to do? And that pause is where you come alive. Your emotions and your history take their place where they belong, and they let you do what matters most so that you can be in charge and you can live. Thanks for caring so much about your relationships and for being with me here today. Peace.
Thanks for listening. Keep this conversation going with the people in your life. Share this podcast and resources. If you're looking to support this work financially, go to fabricmpls.com/give. A 5-star rating and review will also help others find us. Thanks again.